September 1, 2002, Fresno Convention Center. Can you give us your full name?
Okay, my name is Maria Saludado de Magaña.
And where were you born?
I born in Mexico.
When were you born?
In May 16, 1940.
Now, you said you were born in Mexico. What city were you born in?
I born in a very little town. The name is Mechoacanejo, and it's Jalisco. And I came to the United States in 1957. And this is the time when I crossed the border. And I came as American citizens. My father was born in Arizona. For the family that was working in steel mines in Arizona. The name, little town in Arizona was Morenci, Arizona. So it was easy for him to bring his family to the United States like American citizens. So in 1957, I came American citizens, and immediately I became a farm worker. And I work in the areas, with San Diego areas, in Chula Vista, in Otay Mesa. There was a farmers in those days, in 1957. And most of the fields, the work was, the season was made by braceros. But I was a farm worker, so there was, I worked with the braceros. And because it was the braceros, I worked more harder than the other ones, because braceros were very hard workers. So there was, so I worked with them. And they pay us 70 cents an hour. So we work 10 hours a day. So to make us $7 for the day. So that was my mom, and my sister and I. And so we make up $21 both the three a day.
So from before you came here, you went to school in Mexico?
Yes. I went to Mexico in school. I do all my the primaria, and I do my 1 year secundaria. I never finish. So my idea was to come to get a college in Mexico, but because my dad moved all the family to the United States, well, I don't have any chance to go. So, and then like I was a farm worker, I don't have any chance to go anywhere. I was the oldest in the family, the oldest in 7 girls and 2 boys. My older brother is 5 years older than me, and I was the first girl in the family, and from me there's another 6 girls, and the second sister, Dora, she don't have any chance to go to school also. Tonya, my sister, went to school for 2 or 3 years, something like that. I'm not sure exactly. But because she went to school, she speaks better English. My English is only during the time when I was in the strike and the boycott, and you know, so I learned my English. I have 2 full weeks at school in the United States because I really want to learn English. That was my priority in those days. So I put all my time and go to.
So what made you come here? Your father wanted you to come? He brought the whole family?
Yes.
So who did you actually come with? Tell us about coming here.
I came with my dad and my mom and my other sisters. I have Tonya and Dora and Francisco and Celia and Petra and myself. We came to the United States. And the other ones, they born in the United States. They born here in the United States.
And how long did it take you to get here, and what was that journey like?
To get here and
Did you go to Arizona?
Oh, no, no, no.
You,
no, no.
Where did you come to?
When I came from Mexico, my little town, I came to Tijuana.
Okay.
And from Tijuana, you know, there's the border is right there, and my dad took us to the border, and they would register, they make registrations for all of us, and we crossed the border.
Were you excited about coming here? Were you nervous about leaving your home?
Not really. This is the real truth. I wasn't very happy to come to the United States because my life in Mexico, I was a teenager, and you know, when we teenagers, you know, we grow up with our friends and everything. So I was very, very close to my friends in Mexico. So when my dad decided to move to the United States, I was very upset. But you know, parents, they decided they want to move, so I came with them. But because I came to the United States, I have a hard time dealing with the teenagers here in the United States. So for I was 57. I was almost 17, not quite completely 17. But it was very hard for me to deal with the teenagers here because it was different matters. And also they don't speak any Spanish. We call them the pochos. You know, the pochos, and so I don't get along that well with them. So from 17 to 20, I don't have any in touch with people at my age. Mm-hmm. Until when I was 20, and my mom and my dad was kind of sad because they know that I wasn't very happy, and they said, you know, we here in the United States, and there's nothing we can do it because we're not gonna go back to Mexico, and this is our life, and we're gonna stay here. So then I started thinking, well, I think they're right. So I tried to talk a little with some of the same age, and so then I decided that, well, they're not too bad. And one of the worries for me was the hard work in the fields, because when I was a teenager, my dream was to be a model designer. Can you believe it? Person like me to be a model designer, but it was my dream. So when a lot of times I talked to my dad, I want to go to Monterrey to go to school so I can be a model designer. And my dad said, yes. My dad never said no to us. He always encouraged. He always gave us a nice answer to make us feel better. So he said, yeah. When we have the money, you can go. So, but I know when I was in my 20s, I know there's nothing happening like that. But then my worries was that we're working so hard in the fields, and I saw in those days, because there's no social security for farm workers, there's no health plan for farm workers, medical plans. Myself, I have a problem with asthma, very bad asthma, I think affecting me all the pesticides, so I have a very terrible asthma when I was 23. And I saw old people working in the fields, very old, they helping each other, the husband and the wife, and they have, and they need them because they're so old. And I was very worried about my mom and my dad. And I said, well, I don't want my mom and my dad to be like this.
Let's go back and we can bring you back to the point. So you came, you were almost 17.
Almost
you
17.
Studied English for a few years. Oh, I'm sorry, a few weeks.
No, not in this time.
So when you came, what did you do? Did you go right to work in the fields?
Right to work in the fields.
And your parents were already working?
Yeah, my mom was working in a field.
And so you're the, you said Francisco and two of your sisters, so were you all working together?
Well, my sisters, La Petra and, so, and Celia, they was almost a babies.
Okay.
They was under 5 years old, so no, they not. Until my they started to get 6 years and older, so then they started coming with us to help us, like, and pick potatoes. Mm-hmm. They bring us the water, and you know, they were so cute. They bring us a bucket of water, and so they help us in that way.
So what was it like to go to work in the fields? What did you first start picking? And you had never done that before, is that right?
Yes.
So where did you go to work?
Well, there's when coming to the United States, there's nothing you can do it, because if you're going to find another kind of job. Oh, like I say, you know, like I mentioned before, I want to be a model designer. Probably if I'm going to say something like that, they're going to be laughing at me. You're a model designer? You're crazy or something? You know, so I not even mentioned that when I go to school or something like that, because there's no hope for a farm work. You know, when people come to United States, this is the only way we can do it. Easy. For it was easy. It was a hard work. But it was easy. You can get a job in anywhere, because it was like Mexican people, it was only for filth. So everywhere you're going, oh yeah, you can have a job. You know, there's nobody say no, mm-hmm. Especially like you younger. This is the only way you can do it.
So this was in Chula Vista?
In Chula Vista and Otay.
Okay, and you started out with potatoes, or you?
No. And no, those areas, what? They don't have any potatoes.
What did you start with?
Tomatoes, uh-huh. And they have chili peppers, and they have celery. You know celery?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they have a lot of those. They plant a lot, so we work in those. A lot of tomatoes. There's a lot of tomatoes, table tomatoes, because there's two different kinds of tomatoes. There's tomatoes for the canary, and tomatoes for salads, and you know, mm-hmm. those things. And there's a lot of in Chula Vista, well, around San Diego, this is the best tomatoes. In those days, there was a very good, nice looking tomatoes.
Was that harder work because of the care that it took to pick them as opposed to the canary?
This, when you're younger and you want to do this, it looks like, that was okay. I was okay, but later you start to feel tired and tired. The heat is so hot. Night in San Diego area wasn't very hot because there's a breeze a lot of time, and it was a nice area. But moving to the Llano area, we moved. Like I mentioned, we came in 1957. And it was March 1957. And then we moved to the Llano area in October in the same year. Because my family, my dad, has cousins there. They have a little houses. So it was easy for my father. You know, Mexicans are very close. All the compadres and the brothers and sisters are very close. So they said, come over, come to the Llano. You know, we have a little houses. You know, you can live in one of those houses. For 2 or 3 months, we live in two different rooms. There was one for them. One was a bathroom, the room for all of us. We sleep, all of us. And the other was the kitchen and the diner. You know, that was too little. Mm-hmm. But we lived there for maybe three or four months. And the same uncle, they have in the same place, another house. So later we rent two places so we can divide the family in those, so we can have a little room, mm-hmm. for all of us.
Now, when you started then, for the few months that you were in Chula Vista, Otay, mm-hmm. What was the day like, and what did it feel like to do that kind of work? What time did you start in the morning? How did you get to the field?
We came very early in the morning. We came at 5 o'clock in the morning to pick the bus and the bottle. And the bottle pick it up and take us over there. So we get at work at 7. And it was from 7 to 7.
Mm.
From 7 in the morning to 7 afternoon.
No breaks?
No breaks. Of course, no breaks. We have the lunch time, you know, that's why it was 7 to 7, because we take like an hour of lunch and then bring us back, because it was 10 hours.
Now, you said one of your sisters used to bring you water. Where did the water come from?
Oh, no,
from?
This is when I was, when we were here in the Llano area.
Okay, so so what were the conditions like down in...
In San Diego area?
Yeah.
It was a very bad condition. It was a hard, very bad conditions. We don't have any toilets in those days. We need to go to in the same field, try to hide it in the bushes. No, there's no toilets at all. We bring their own water, mm-hmm. like in yards or something, and we move in that water. This is I'm talking in Chula Vista area, mm-hmm. in the San Diego area. Moving to the Llano area, it was almost the same thing happening. You know, there's no toilets in the fields. They have a different thing for water. They have a big cans of water, and they have a stream, like a wire, and one can string beans or corn,
a tin can.
Yeah, like that, and they tied it with a wire and. Everybody drinks with the same can,
mm-hmm.
and when we started, this is in the Llano area. Yeah, I'm talking now. I'm the Llano area.
Okay.
So,
how much money were you making when you first started?
And over there in Chula Vista, well, we're making $7 a day. We make like and they pay us like every 2 weeks. We making like a $40-something, $47 or something like that.
So was that a piecework or was that day?
No,
rate?
There was a day because it was a 70 cents an hour.
Okay, so now you're only there for a few months and you're moving again. How did that make you feel?
There was kind of sad because in the beginning I was already getting attached to Tijuana, the people in Tijuana. And it was everybody was Hispanic, so that was okay.
Mm-hmm.
When I make the difference is when we moved to the Llano area. In the Llano, we don't come directly to the Llano. There was Early Mart. Early Mart is 7 miles north to the Llano.
So just so I understand, when you had come up north, you were actually living in Tijuana and then coming over daily.
To work in the fields?
Right.
Yes, from
okay.
Tijuana to the San Diego, there's
okay.
only like a few miles.
Right. So okay.
No, we came every day.
Okay. So then you made the move to Early Mart.
Early Mart, yes.
Okay. And why did your father want to move up there? Just because he knew people and
because his cousin, they live in the area.
Okay. And what did you begin doing there?
Well, this is the thing. I was very sad because there was poachers around us, and that's why I was very upset because my communication with the poachers wasn't very good, and so I didn't even have a friend until I was in my 20s,
mm-hmm.
And then as I started, I don't dated anybody from 17 to 20. Because I was very afraid to these people. They don't like us because we don't speak any English. And I don't know, that was my imagination problem.
And what fields did you begin working in when you were there?
In the Early Mart.
Right.
Well, when I came to the Early Mart, I started working in Peace Suite. Peace Suite, there's a calling in Spanish, Chicharo. And so we do chicharro, and it was a piece work. We fill it up a basket, and we're going to trade it for the money. We're making like a 70 cents for basket, or 70 cents, 80 cents, sometimes 90 cents, sometimes less, there was
Now, Pick Sweet, the company?
Sweet Peace.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Okay. And you were all living, you said, in kind of tight quarters.
Very, very little house, yes.
Okay. And you weren't going to school?
No, I don't. I don't have any school at all myself.
Okay.
My sister, Tonya, went. And the rest of my sisters went.
Were they working in the fields also? Or
My other sisters?
The ones that were in school?
Oh, well, during the time when it was like a summertime, during the breaks.
But otherwise, everybody worked in the fields?
Yeah, everybody was working in the fields.
Okay, and what was the day like there? Was it also from early morning to late at night?
In those days, I'm going to change now. We work from, in the morning, we work from 6 o'clock in the morning to 4 o'clock in the afternoon, so we get home by close to 5 o'clock. They pay us 4 hours. They pay us 80 cents an hour. All depends. If there was a good, you could find a good labor contractor, a good boss, a good grower, and they pay 85 cents. From years, they pay us 85, 90 cents, 95 cents. Sometimes well, you're very lucky if you get even a dollar, but it was those days.
So what was your experience like? What is a good grower or a good labor contractor?
Well, I worked with Pagarulo. Pagarulo was a grower, and it was very, very not nasty. It was very. Not mean, but they always yelling and come on guys to work and do this and that. This is not nice that you're making a lot of mess in my work and you're messing this and that. But in the longer for me, it was okay. It was better because it was like you work all the time there, you get a full pay. And you have a full pay. You don't need to worry about labor contractor because labor contractor sometimes they pay you with cash or sometimes they pay you with a check, but there is no money in the bank. So for me, it was better to work with Pagarulo, and sometimes with Jumara, and it was also safe because when you work with these companies. They never bounced, the check was okay.
And so when they would tell you to either hurry up or to not do things, did you ever respond?
No, because I ignored it. I think we learned very good things with my dad. He said that you're never going to do nothing if you respond you say, why you yelling at me? They say, there's nothing, there's nothing you can do it. And ignore it. So I ignore it. I work and I it was, I know when it was kind of mini or sometimes, like I said, mm-hmm. So I ignore it.
So this, you worked from 57 and you mentioned 60 when you were 23. What occurred? Did changes happen? Or
well, I work in, I think, and in those years I work in picking grapes, but it was a different kind of picking grapes for wine. It was different than picking grapes for a table. And during those years, you need to make it working harder because you have a tray very big. And you fill it up with grapes and dumping in the big, they call it gondolas. And so you need to be, not to be careful with the, because if you're very careful with the dust, then you're not going to do nothing because you're always scared, oh, I'm not going to get a dust or things like that. So you need to forget about those things. So when you finish, you have dust all over and juice and all your body, even your body is, so sweet with all the grapes. This is the difference, the table grapes. Mm-hmm. Because table grapes, you're picking and you're making number one, number two, and you're more careful with that kind of thing because they go for the market. And so it was a little difference.
Okay, and so you were working and getting dirty and dusty and tired, and then what? Did you stay at that work?
I work only for a few. We work for 61, 62, and 63. during the season time, of course. Mm-hmm. And the rest of the the years, I work in different things, like a chopping cotton, pick potatoes, like I mentioned, and sometimes even we pick oranges. I wasn't very good to pick oranges because I was very scared to heights. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't a very good worker. But in grapes and other things, I was good.
Now, when did Citizens...
You ever work in the sugar beets?
Yes, I work in the sugar beets. Oh, it's terrible. We went every... this is in most of the winter time area. Winter time when it's the sugar beets. There was one, and it was so little money. That was terrible, because see, we went to the sugar beets, we went, and they give us a corner, and they say, "Well, you finish that corner." And we took it 3 days to finish the corner, and you know how much they pay us? $9 for my dad and my two sisters. And I, well, my two sisters and I, and my dad, four people, and it was only $9. And it was so hard the first day. You cannot even get up from your bed because all your body, your legs, every part of your body hurts so bad because, you know, you've been hanging this way, so... It was terrible, but it was. This was the only work we can catch in those days. Like after all the vines, we finished by the March or something like that, and we need to make some kind of money for milk or for some very neat things.
Mm-hmm. Had you already become a citizen?
Yeah,
right away.
No, I'd rather wait when we cross this border, become American citizens.
So, what about the Prezzetto program?
What were you doing in the sugar beets?
In the sugar beets, we chopping beets.
Thinning.
It's like there's a very, it's a hole like this, and it's that big, and you need to live like. One sugar beet like this and the other like this. So you need to have a very good, when you chop in the beet, you need to be sure there's only one beet. Mm-hmm.
Then you use a cuartito?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Where did you live when you, where was the sugar beets?
Oh, this in an area like in Wasco area, mm-hmm. or in different areas around, but it's most of that in Wasco area or in Chester or sometimes in the area from Portersville, different areas.
So you would go from Dinuba there?
From Early Mart to this areas.
Yeah. Every day?
Every day, yes.
You didn't live up there?
Yes. No, we don't move over there.
Did you ever live away from your house?
Yes. In 1962 and 61, I think 1962 and 61 and 62, we went to Santa Rosa to pick prunes. And this is, the prunes, they do like a dry it. Yes, because my sister, there was a little and they can help us. So everybody can work picking those my father and my and another person, they check the trees and all the fruit that come down. So we pick and we fill it up with boxes, and they took it to the place when they dry. I think it's like an oven or something like that.
Where did you live in Europe?
We live in places that the owner has a place in a house. It was a house like a carriage, and there was a big carriage, and they have like a little part for the kitchen. So everybody lives in this area, yeah. And then from then, we move to a labor camp, and we live in tents. And the parents, they make a tables of boxes, make a table.
How many people in the tent?
There was a families. A family like us.
It was all your family?
My family, yes.
What was your mother doing all day while you were?
Well, she was working too. But then also she left before us, so she can start cooking. By the time when we get there, my mom, she already have she and have part of the cooking thing.
Did you eat breakfast in the morning?
Most of the times we don't never feel like to eat, especially when you're really tired. You know, the hungry comes when around 9 o'clock after you work. I started working already hard. Around 9 o'clock, you feel like to eat something.
So I'm interested in how your mother...
Make a tortillas de harina.
Yeah, she get up before you?
Yes. My mom, you always get up at 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock in the morning. All depends what time we're going to leave the house. Mm-hmm. And I started making tortillas and making burritos.
And did the older girls get up and help her?
Never let us to help her, because sometimes my mom, we decided that we're not going to let my mom to go to with us. Mm-hmm. So that way we don't need to help my mom cooking. So my mom, most of the time yesterday, in the beginning, she started working with us. But then later, we decided my mom, she needs to stay at home.
I'd like to back up a little bit too before we go on. I want to know what your life was like in Michoacán, and your father was working up here, right?
No, in Michoacán. The town was Michoacanejo, pero es
Jalisco.
Oh, my dad and you want to go back?
Yeah.
Do you want me to tell you what happened in those days?
Okay.
My dad. I mentioned before that he born in United States. Mm-hmm. And 1920s, during the Depression in United States, his father moved back to Mexico. So my father grew up in part in United States and part in Mexico. He born in 1913. So he went back in 1920-something, I'm not sure exactly. Mm-hmm. So, but in 1940, you wouldn't know that part. In 1940, my dad, he was recruited for the Second War in United States, and they started calling for all the citizens. It doesn't matter what part of you, Mexico, you know. So my dad was one of those people. So he came to United States in 1940, and from that time, he was going to visit my mom like every other year or every something like that. So because we and our sisters, we're 2 years apart. So every time when my daddy went over there, he left another girl or another brother, you know. So it was, in 1940, my daddy came to United States again. In 1942, 1942 when he was registered for the Second World, and then he don't pass, but he was in a special thing. I don't remember.
Because he was working in the mine.
Yeah, and then he started working in a company in Los Angeles. From since that, so he started working in a company they call him Burlingham Steel in Los Angeles. So then for years, my dad works in that company until he moved all the family to United States, that he stopped working there. And one of the reasons he don't want to go back to the same work is because he don't want his family or his girls to grow up in Los Angeles. This is one of the main purpose.
So your dad sent enough money to your mother?
Oh, yes.
To raise all your kids?
Yes. My dad was a very, very responsible person. My dad was very responsible. He never left my mom with no money. So, but and also my dad was a musician. So when he was in Mexico, He was in a music band, or mariachi. And so then we never, so I think this is one of the reasons I was very happy in New Mexico, because I don't have very much worries until I cross the United States.
And you had family
in Mexico?
Jalisco, tias,
and oh yeah, I have a, I used to have a uncle that was my dad's brother, and he passed away a few weeks ago, and he was 92.
You baptized down there? You have quinceañeras?
No, I never have a quinceañera, no. I was participating with another quinceañera with a friend of mine.
Any other special memories like that about life and living in Jalisco? With your mom raising all your kids?
Oh, yeah. I think I have a good memories from over there, because I grew up with my cousins, my uncle's children. Yes, we grew up and we have a good time. My grandfather and my father's side have some little orchards with the peaches and pears. And we used to go over there to the place, and it was not like a big grower, it was a very tiny one. But it was, for us, it was good, because every year in the season time, we pick the peaches and we sell to the people at the market. It was like a little market, and then it was a river across. So after that, sometimes we get in the water and swim in the water. Yeah, I have a very good memories, like I think most of the children.
And you had abuelos?
Yes.
From both sides?
My abuelos for my mom and my dad, for my mom's side, I think he died very young, in the young age, because I remember I know him, and I have very little memories about him. And my grandmother, she passed away after we moved from Mexico to the United States. But in my father's side, my two abuelos, they died 1 year apart. And the memory was very excited. I think I was almost 15 when my grandmother died. And I was 16 when my grandfather died, because this is the time when we moved to the United States. I was he passed away in December in the 1956, and we came to the United States in March 1957. So that was very very close to the time when he.
And so he got a little rancho.
And my grandfather.
Yeah.
It was like a orchard, very little. It was not a rancho.
Do you remember him working?
Well, I told you to my grandfather was not very good campesino, because he was the person with a very very nice person. He would write and read very good, so he helps in the little town, writing the birth certificates by hand, and do this kind of thing, this kind of job. That was not like a big thing, like right now, in those days, to people that write and read, there was too much. And he was a very good reader, like my dad. My dad, he'd read almost every single book, every magazine, and they encourage a lot of reading. I think most of my education was in reading. I read a lot, in Spanish and English, because I really like to read a lot. And then when I know Caesar encouraged me too, like my dad. My dad said, he always said, you don't worry about books. If the book say you're always gonna learn from them, if they're not a good, they say sometimes people like criticize for books. They said, "Oh, that's not a good book." And my dad is always told me, you're always gonna find it is bad, it is good, but You know the definition of good and bad, so they know you are a good reader. And I encourage you to read. So I read a lot.
Pick up. You had mentioned the Bracetos that you had encountered. Was that up in early March?
No.
Where was that, later or earlier?
No, Braceros was in San Diego area.
Okay.
When I came, in the beginning, in the 57. No, in the Llano area, there's no Braceros at all.
Did that affect your getting work down there?
What was
your interaction with them?
No, because they were good people. They were very nice, sweet people. For my world was my mom in those days, because there was a heavy boxes to pick up, and because we were working with the braceros, they said, "Oh no, señora, don't pick it out of the boxes. I can help." So no, there was a very nice people. There was not too bad. It wasn't bad people.
Okay.
There was a hard workers, and because there was a hard workers, we need to work hard. But there was not a bad people. There was not a bad person. You can get along very well. I get along very well. Everybody get along with them very well.
And you were still finding work? They weren't taking jobs?
No.
It was work for everybody?
Yeah, it was work for everybody.
Okay. So in early March now, were you working just with Mexicanos or with Filipinos when you were...
Sometimes with Filipinos too. They're very quiet people because the communication wasn't very good, But there was a very friendly Filipinos, and my communication wasn't very good with them because I don't know any English and they don't know any Spanish. Some they speak very little Spanish, but this is the reason they don't have that much communication with them. But I heard some of the other women, they were Zapochas. They have a very good very good along with the Filipinos, and sometimes they have a crews with Filipinos and Mexicans.
So now we're in the early 60s, and what were you doing? Just continue to work? Or
myself?
Yeah.
Right now?
No, in the early 60s.
In the early 60s. Oh, yes. I like I say, I work in, then I work in those grapes from 60 to 63 in grapes for wine, and 63 to, and I started working full-time in table grapes.
Okay, and now we're in 63?
Yes.
Okay, and grapes occupied the next few years of your life, so to speak.
Oh, well, I think from this 57 and since I moved to the early market, there was in grapes, but in different things, like a wine or table grapes,
right,
or canary grapes. It was my work for most of the grapes. But it's because of different seasons between of them. We have potatoes, we have our chopping cotton. So sometimes in the same year, you can work in different things. Like in March or April, we started chopping cotton. And then grapes started coming, like chipping. Chipping is like thinning the bunch, to make a thinner, and then they can make a number one. When you pick up grapes, you always you are a good worker, and you know how to pick a good grapes. You put your fingers, your hand like this, and that's a number one, because they're always the growers, the best growers, they always want us to make a number one his grapes. If we find out there's a bunch like this with no finger, there's a number two, so then we make a two boxes, one number two and one number one.
Was the pay the same for both?
Yeah, because there's not very much number twos.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's the same.
So this was almost getting on to the point where the Filipinos were becoming active. And
yeah.
Did you know that that was coming about? What was your sense, and how did you learn?
Well, you want to know when I met Cesar Chavez?
We can, sure.
Okay. Because I was already talking about 63, and 1964, we heard a lot of, the unions come in and they said, are we going to unite? We're going to have a union and we have this and that. And then my dad always believed in union because I think his father was in a big strike in Arizona in I don't know what years. And my dad was very strong. He knows the union is the best thing for people. And said, oh, we're going to have a union. Oh, vamos a tener unión, vamos a hacer esto. But it wasn't very serious because we never have a person to come over and organizers. So in 1964, it was April 1964, when a compadre of my dad's, the name was Leandro Gutierrez, and he came to my dad's place, a house, and well, all of us, and he said, ahora sí vamos a tener unión. We're going to have a union. And my dad said, really? He said, yeah. And he said, we have this guy. He really is a good organizer. And my dad said, oh, really? Yeah. And he said, and we're going to have a meeting. And my dad said, when are you going to have the meeting? Well, we're going to have a meeting in my house. And my dad said, okay. And the compadre said to my dad, said, okay, compadre, find you all your friends and bring it over to my house because we're going to have a meeting. And as my dad said, oh, okay. He was very excited. And he told us, we're going to call your tia and call this and that and that and that because we're going to have a meeting. A meeting for the for this person. And we asked him, what is the person's name? And my dad said, well, they say this is Cesar Chavez. And I said, oh, okay. So we called my aunts and my uncles and everybody. So we went to the compadre's house. And it was a little house. It was a big house. And it was full. So because I was the last person I came, because we bring people, so I wasn't the first people. So I was the last person, so I never saw his face. I never saw his face, but he was so into the meeting. It was talking like a big dream, but the dream was very nice. And I liked the dream because I feel like all my body picked all those words that he said, like, we the workers, we make a race this country, and we pay less. And we live in the less than anybody. Why? We need to do something. We need to get together. We need, and it was very, not too chary, not like a politico. It was so quiet, so slow, like every word that he said, it was so strong. So we can pick it. I pick it at myself. I don't know about the other ones, but I pick so hard. Then we went to drop my other people, you know, after the meeting. We took the same people that were bringing. We take it home. So I never saw his face. I never say goodbye. And I never say, hi, Caesar. I never say anything. So then... But the funny thing was, Tuesdays, there was a Spanish movie in Early Mart. And most of the Tuesdays, we went to see the movie in Spanish. And my sister said, oh, the meeting was going to be on a Tuesday, so we're not going to do the movies. And I said, don't worry. We're going to bring the people, and we love the people, and we're going to stay and the last, you know, almost outside, and then we can go to the movies. But because Caesar was so into the meeting, we forgot about that. We forgot about the meeting, the movie. So then they said, so my dad said, oh, we're going to have a meeting. And I said, where? In our house. In our house? Yeah, we're going to have a meeting. And I said, oh, okay, so maybe I can meet Caesar. So what happened? It happened the same thing. I never met him. I saw only this part of the face, no in front, you know, but in the way he spoke. It was very into my, I really pick up. So the next meeting, the same happening, because it was the same thing. We bring more people, and we bring them back, so I never saw him. So it was 1965. It was all this year, the 64 all the way to 65. One day, it was September the 14th, it was Saturday, and somebody knocked the door. And I opened the door, and it was Dolores Huerta. Dolores was the person she picked the union dues. Every time when she get home to my house to pick the union dues, I never saw her. So that was the first time I met it that day. So I was not impressed with Dolores. I wasn't feel like with Caesar's book. So I said, why she came to pick up the money? My daddy's money. And it was only $350, but for me it was a lot. And then I was getting ready to go to the dance, Dolores, because we tried to celebrate this, September the 16th and Saturday, and it was the 14th. So Dolores knows my dad. She knows my dad because he was in another meetings or something, you know. So they were already planning about a strike. So my dad said, okay, Señora Huerta, come on over. And my mom, my dad was talking to Dolores, and Dolores was very warm welcome in my house. I was the only person that was very nice to her. So then we went to the dance, and she stayed talking to my mom and my dad. They was talking about the strike and the following Monday. So we went, it was Sunday the 15th, and my dad said, we're gonna have a meeting in Guadalupe Church. No, in the church, but we're gonna have a meeting because we're in the planning for the strike on Monday. So at nighttime, it was Sunday, and my dad was talking about the strike the next day, and he said, we're gonna go like a regular work, we're gonna go dressing like a work, we're gonna take a lunch, but remember, we're gonna talk to everybody, we're gonna be sure that everybody in our crew to walk up in the strike. And I said, okay. So I was 20, almost 25 years, but I think I was looking like an 18, like a teenager, because I was very skinny. I was 110, so I said, okay. So everybody, let's go, we're gonna strike, we're gonna work in the Huelga, and everybody was, what? And yeah, we're gonna go on a strike. We're gonna make more money and this and that. And so we organized all our crew. Everybody went on a strike in our crew. So then I went to see Dolores that day, because Dolores and my dad, they was already planning that if my dad was organizing all the crew, she wants him to be sure that everybody was in a list. The names for the people that get in a strike. So my dad said, okay, take this list to Dolores and tell all the people in our crew that went in a strike. So I went to Dolores, and Dolores wasn't very nice because I wasn't nice to her. So and then, so that what happened in essence. It was 1965, we went in a strike. And we were striking every day and the money.
Before we get into all of that, now you said your dad had been a strong union man, but had he talked to you about unions? Had you ever, has anybody ever asked you to join a union before?
No, nobody asking. But I think my daddy learned from his dad, because he was in a union member back in the years over there in Arizona.
So what did you think of it?
Your dad was probably in the union in steel.
Yeah, the steel company in Los Angeles was a union member.
And so what did you think of the idea of that? Were you just a young person said it sounds exciting?
No,
or a, what did you think
it was,
of it?
No, I was it was excited. It was not like the strongest for the union came later. After I just started meeting more of the people and making things that, you know, together people can get stronger and stronger. No, in the beginning it was excited things, excited to do something different. And that was excited, I think.
And what did you feel when you saw all the people, so many people that you couldn't even see?
Yeah, that was nice. It was very nice to see everybody in a strike and everybody's yelling and, come on, get on a strike and huelga, we're going to try to get more money and, you know, like this. Yeah. And I was good speaker to the people. I started thinking how to talk to the people, how to say, come on, because... for my experience in the field, and I said, come on, you know, we're working so hard and we're making so less money, come on, and things like that. So I took him to the people, and people listened. I think I became an organizer. I don't know if I'm a good organizer, but I feel like I'm a good organizer.
So, and did you say when you actually did see Cesar? When was the first time you actually laid your eyes on him?
The real time when I met Cesar, I saw his face. It was in the 16th, September 16th, yes.
And what did you think?
Oh, it was nice. It was nice. He was so occupied. He was so much involved with the strike there, and you know. But in the way, yeah, he was a nice person.
So talk about those early days then. There was a decision to strike?
Can I do one thing on this? At the house meetings, Cesar came, did anybody else come with him?
Oh, yeah, almost, you know.
You mean the organizers or anything?
No, he came by him. No. There was only Cesar. No, in those days, in the beginning, in the house meetings, he always came by herself.
Then who was the organizer then for early March, you know?
Cesar was a person.
Nobody else?
No, it's nobody else. No, Cesar was the only person he came to early March. Okay. No, later, it was later in the 66 when I met Julio Hernandez. Mm-hmm. Julio Hernandez, I think he was in charge for Corcoran or something like that. No. No, Julio wasn't with him. It was only Cesar.
So tell us about the actual activities. One day you were at work and the next day you weren't. What happened?
Well, when we get in a strike, you know, and I don't want to be, I want to be very strong. I want to win the strike. And I want to, you know, I started getting stronger and stronger and I talked to my sister, no, let's go, we're going to win. We want to win, and my sister said, you think we're going to... And I think my sisters, they really follow me because I was the older ones, and I think they started getting stronger too. So no, we're going to win the strike. We're going to win the strike. If we stay right, you know, and we can stop everybody in the fields, we want to win the strike, and everybody started getting stronger and stronger. But it was like October 65 when we started thinking that we're not going to win the strike because we started to see all these people, undocumented people, they bring it to break that strike. And we started feeling hurt because it was, I started feeling like they've been using the same people against me. Some of my friends, they went to work because, you know, they offered more money to them, or, you know, and I feel so bad.
So were you walking picket lines?
Oh, yes. I've been so many picket lines.
And people were crossing the picket lines? Or?
Well, some people, the undocumented people, yes, a lot. In the beginning, until the 65, there was undocumented people. They came from different areas, from Tijuana and Juarez and Mexicali. And buses, there's not only like cars, but buses. Like in the place where Helen Chavez was working in Sierra Vista, that company was the Giorgio, and it was like 27 buses. It was like 1,500 people a day that was working in that company. So there was a lot of people. And they then replaced with the undocumented people. They bring the same buses from some, I don't know for how many areas.
And how many people do you think were picketing at that point?
Oh, I think I'd say hundreds, a thousand around from early March to the Leno. Yeah, and so
but were you at DeGiorgio? Where were you?
No.
Were you all different places?
No, I was in different places. My area when I woke up in a strike was Piagarulo.
Mm-hmm.
There was like one, the grower I told you, that was kind of cranky. Most of the times cranky. No, that was my company. But then after that, you know, we do all kind of, some people, they came to another area and they get a place to pick it in. But it was people all over in the streets and the fields. There was people all over and we strike. And that was a good strike. We pick it up because we know the areas for the growers. We know the areas, like I know the fields for Pagarulo, I know the fields for Jumara, I know the fields, we know the fields. We learn the whole thing. And then most of the peoples in, like early March, we know each other. Where do you work? Oh, I work for so-and-so. Oh, okay, what block are you working? Oh, in 24, or oh, in 4, or 54, La 52, or, you know, that was for one street to another street, that was blocks, and, you know, was companies of this areas.
How was...
The workers didn't cross the picket line.
No.
You had to find them? And then try to get them to come out?
Yes, because we know the areas. I heard that some in some area that's working, they bring some people. Let's go over there and talk to them. And so we went to the area and I'd say, oh, let's go, the witness strike. You're not supposed to be to cross our picket line. We are brothers, come on. And we pull so many people out, and then the next day they bring some more people. Like a crazy thing. I think the growers started feeling that we really very strong, and they really, and then they started fight us a lot with the police, and you know, with the police, and then they started do all kind of things to our cars. Like one day after the picket line, we come in, and this guy, I think it was one of those favors for the growers, they push us, or they match my car, the car when I was in, and I was bleeding, and they took me to the Leno hospital, and they don't do nothing. They, you know, because we are strikers, and they don't give us attention.
What did they do? You were in your car and they ran into it with the
Yeah, there was a, we was driving like this with no stop signs. Mm-hmm. The stop signs, it was the people that come in like in this way. Mm-hmm. And the people that don't stop, they smash the car when I was in.
Was Antonio with you?
I'm not sure. I don't remember. I'm not sure.
So how was it organized? What was the strategy then? Where you worked, you were asked to go picket at those places?
I was in a Pagarulo ranch, we're supposed to be to organize the people from the area,
okay.
You know, from because we know everybody. So it was easy for me to talk to my friend or my comadre or, you know, you know what I mean? So it was our responsibility is to talk to the people from your area because you know your area, you know your friends, you know these people. So you work with them, pull them up, and you know, call in for a strike.
And where did you talk to them? Did you just go to the site and then start? How did you begin to recruit them?
We started talking like you know, there was you know what, we're gonna get in a strike, and you know. we went, yeah, I was already listening. I was listening about they planning to go on a strike, because by the time that they already, the Filipinos, there was on a strike. The Filipinos started a strike in Coachella, and from Coachella they moved to the Llano area. So the Filipinos are already in a strike. Caratan, Amton Caratan. Like I said, we know the growers, we know the people. And they say, you know, the people in Amton Caratan, they're already in a strike. Oh, really? Yeah, the Filipinos are already going in a strike. And we're going to get in a strike. So call your friends, tell them that we're gonna stop. We're not going to get a, don't cross the picket line. So they, oh, yeah, okay, yes, yes, yes. So people, they was very excited.
So you said by October you weren't sure whether it was effective.
By October, we started thinking that we're not going to win the strike with a strike like this, because we have already so many break strikers from different areas. So then Cesar started calling us for the meeting, and he said, we're going to send farm workers to San Francisco and to L.A., to the main brokers. So we're going to make a picket lines over there, because the season finished in table grapes by late November. And so they said, we're going to go start picking the stores, because in the fields there's no more people, because it's going to be the end of the harvest. So we need to go to the stores and start make a picket lines over there. So we went to San Francisco, and we started picketing because it was a ship was ready to move grapes to all a different country, to Europe. I don't remember exactly. So they sent a lot of picketers to San Francisco, and we have a big Houston victory, because the loan Germans, they refused to handle the grapes. And to chip it so it was a very good it was a very good response for them. And then we came to the lane and we told the people, you know what, we stopped those grapes, they don't put it in the barco, in the chip.
When you said Cesar started calling, did he have your number at this point? Did he call you? Did he call your house?
No, it was so easy, because even people, you know, to make a big meeting, we can go in the streets and we can call in, hey, we're going to have a meeting. Cesar wants us in the, in the park. He wants everybody to go over there. He makes a meetings like hundreds and in a few minutes. We don't need to go and making a big planning for a week for a big mass of people. No. The people, it was so beautiful. It was a very good response. We go to the car and we call in everybody, you know, because everybody was a farm worker. So we went in the street and he said, hey, Cesar wants us in the park, and because he's going to tell us something that's very important. Everybody know about what's going on. So yeah, people come.
Now, how did you get to San Francisco?
In cars.
Uh-huh.
In different cars. For the cars the union have. So some of the farm workers, they have their own cars, and we use our own cars.
Now, you've never done something like that before.
No,
so
no,
what
no,
were
no.
you thinking?
I think it was some, we want something. We want to do, we very started getting so into this movement. And thank you. No, I think we are starting it was something for us. This is my job, and I want to fight for my job. Nobody's gonna take my job out. So we started to feel it was our job, and we're going to fight for them. And Cesar was so involved in the no balance. And I think for the way my dad always tell us not to respond to bad to the people, and I think it was easy for me to accept when Cesar tell us, don't be angry. And I think I still feel that way. I'm not angry, because I feel like when I mentioned before about Pegarula was a cranky person, I was not angry. And I think it was his job. I think he was the owner. I think it was his thing. And I think he was one. He wants his things be done in a good way, in a good and nice thing. I think was a person like you want to be clean, and I want you, he wants to be. So I was thinking that way. So when I was fighting for my job, I think this is my job, this is my work, and I think I'm gonna fight it in the way, in the nice way, not respond angry. And I still, like I said before, I don't feel angry. When I was marching to Sacramento, I was not angry. I was nice because I think this is my job, my own thing. And so this is in the way I feel.
How large a group went to San Francisco? Do you have any idea? How many cars?
I'm not sure how many cars.
A small group?
It was kind of big.
A big group?
It was a big group because yeah. I think it was a good show up. I think that's why the longshoremen feels like so sorry for us. The people from farm workers went all the way over there because of us were not very good. Not very, very good jacket, so, you know, a good shoes. So I think they really feel sorry.
And who led that? Was Cesar involved with that particular one?
Yes, Cesar.
Okay. And then you got up there and you'd never been there before.
No, because we stay in one of the churches, the Protestant church. I don't remember what church was it. But they leave us to stay there, so we sleep on the floor, and some with a sleeping bag, some with nothing, because we don't not even have a sleeping bags. Something, you know, we have an old blanket. We took an old blanket, and yeah.
Did you have any idea how long you were going for?
No. I'd never have idea how long it's going to be this, mm-hmm. how long, yes.
And then, so what happened? You went out to different stores, different markets?
Well, we went to San Francisco, and we do that kind of thing, and we came back. And then Cesar sent us to L.A., and L.A. we started picketing.
But when you say that kind of thing, what did you do there? What did you do in San Francisco? Did you carry signs in front of markets?
Oh, yeah. Big signs, boycott grapes, boycott grapes. And we don't know, and I even have idea how, you know, to make up signs. And one of my signs, it was not very good. It was not very good spelling, and there was somebody was laughing about my sign. And so I asked the person, "How can you laughing at my sign?" He said, "Oh, you know what? Your sign is not right." And I said, "Why? Because it's not. That's not completed the world. The word." And I said, okay. "Oh, I'm sorry." And I said, "Okay." So I felt because you know I don't know how to spell good. We make our own signs with anything, with a cardboard, you know, any piece of board because we don't have a money to buy a nice nice board.
So were people asking what you were doing, and were you beginning to educate them?
Yes,
why it was
we started telling everybody. Well, we are farm workers. We're in a strike, and we really like to win this strike. It's so important for us because we're making very little money, and in those days we're asking for $120 an hour, but so that was in the beginning.
How many days do you recall being in San Francisco?
I'm not sure how many days. Maybe 6 or 7 days. No, not that much. Not that big. No.
And when you were coming back, did you feel you had made
progress? When we came to the Llano, we were very happy because we stopped that thing. It was like a big victory. We came so happy. We stopped the grapes. They're not going to ship into another, because they were shipping to Europe, I think. Oh, you know, we stopped those grapes, and then blah, blah, blah. So we excited.
So when the longshoremen agreed to
it. Where the longshoremen agreed not to handle those grapes.
And then you came back to Delano.
And then we started picking it, and then we sent us to L.A.
Before you go on, in your story now, you've been on strike for several months. That means you weren't making any money.
No, we don't make any money.
So how did you eat?
Well, people started getting us donations. People from the churches, especially like Chris Hermeyer was with us since in the beginning, and I think Chris was working with the churches. So the Protestants, they started to give us donations and food. And we was planning the Christmas. We're not going to have any Christmas trees. And then my sisters, because we almost at the end of the year at this point. So that's my sister was telling us, oh, we're not going to have a Christmas tree. Always we have a cheap Christmas tree, but we always have it. And I said, no, we're not going to have the Christmas tree. So, and then my sister won the Christmas tree in school, because they have a Christmas tree to decorate in the school. So one of my sisters won the Christmas tree, so she was happy. We're going to have a Christmas tree. We won at the Christmas tree in school. And we was thinking we're not going to have that much food for the end of the year, the 65. Walter Reuther, the United Auto Workers, I think for the first time came to the Llano and bring us a big caravan of food. So we have a turkeys. We have a ham, we have all kind of things. So we don't have any money. Don't get any money.
But you weren't eating at home, how are you?
No. They cook us in a, we have a place out of the Llano area. There was in a big place. It was a big place, very too far from the Llano. There was Blacks was the owners. They have like a junkyard. And they rent it to the union. So all the food they give us, they give it to the to donate it to the union. They put it over there, and it was like a camp or something like that, because they have a kitchen. They have a kitchen, and some of the women strikers like my mom and my aunt, there was cooking over there, and we picked it, and we came back to the over to that area, that particular area, and we have all right there food made.
The rest of the year, did you eat at Filipino Hall?
No. That was the early thing. No, we're not ready for the Filipino Hall, because later, the unions, they came together, because you remember there was two different unions. The R was National Farm Workers Association, and the Filipinos, there was AWOC. So they have their own Filipino hope, but we don't have any Filipino, and at that time, we don't have a Filipino hope. Later, when the unions, they came together, then we have a Filipino hope, and then we went to eat in a Filipino hope.
So
there was
every day you would go out and pick it, your dad would go out and pick it, and two of your sisters?
And my sister only, but at that time my next sister, she was already married, she has her own family, and she was not in a strike because her husband was not a supporter. He was, there was Dora, my sister.
So it's you, with you,
Antonia.
And
yes.
And your father.
And my father.
On the picket line.
And La Picket. It's sometimes my mom, and sometimes my mom was picketing.
Sometimes your mom would cook and picket and cook some more.
Yes.
And the whole family would go to camp to eat then.
The whole family, well, then we started to get donations. So my mom used to have a food for the house. Wow. So my kids' sisters can get something to eat over there.
Because you were in Early Mark, right?
Yes. So
you had to drive to Delano?
Yes, every day.
You mentioned to Giorgio, what was going on with Shenley? That wasn't that about the same time here?
Well, this is in 1966, we have a big march to Sacramento, 300 miles to Sacramento. During the time when we was marching to Sacramento, Shenley was a big company. Then my dad was one of the workers there. And Shenley, he decided that he's going to sign a contract. So that was easy because my dad could return back to work. And it was a very good for the family because that way my dad started making money so he can support my sisters. And we stay in the strike. And that's in 1966. During the time when we was in the march to Sacramento, Shenley signed a contract. He decided that he's going to sign a contract. I didn't know exactly 1 month and who signed that contract, but immediately when he decided that he's going to sign a contract, people went to work. So I'm not sure it was in 66 or 67 when he signed the contract.
And was that the first contract?
It was the first contract in the union and for the history in the United States, they recognized National Farm Workers Association.
So your dad must have been pretty excited.
Yes, very excited because he was an irrigator. So he was a full-time worker a year around.
Did the mood change at home?
Oh, yeah. Well, for my dad, it changed because he was a worker. But for the rest of the family, it wasn't changed because the rest of the family was in a strike. So my dad, like I said, he was a full-time worker. He don't have that much chance to go to picket lines. But my mom and my sister, they have a picket line. So on Sundays or Saturdays, after school, my mom with the rest of the other women and the rest of the kids, like my aunt, they went to L.A. Or, the closest, sometimes L.A. Most of the times to L.A., but sometimes to San Francisco. All depends in at that time who was the market that was the more important for who was the best, the ones they need the pressure. So sometimes Safeway was one of the hardest, and at that time they have Safeway and they have, what is the name of the market? It was another market, later came Lucky's. I don't remember the name, but I was in the 70s, I think, Camel Lucky's. Alphaveda was one of those, but of the harder ones, it was Safeway.
So when Shenley signed, was there a ceremony? Was there a celebration?
We don't have a chance to make a big celebration because if we have so many people in the strike there. But that was a good thing, they signed a contract. And a lot of families, the husbands, they went to work. Like most of the head of the house, they went to work in Shenley.
Was it an
opportunity? You were on the march when Shenley
signed. Yeah, yes.
So was it an opportunity for you to feel personally...
I was very happy because I started to realize that our hard work is coming, it was a big victory. So that was nice. Yes, I was very happy to see it. And also one big relief that my father is going to go back to work and is going to make some money. So then my family, my sisters, and then they're going to, continue with a lot of suffering.
Now, where were you picketing at this point, after that point?
Well, after Shenley, the union, they decided they're going to put a pressure to the Georgia, the big company, the one I mentioned to you, there was 1,500 workers that was in the Delano area, and they have a big camp they call in Rancho Sierra Vista. This is the area where Helen Chavez was working. So the union, the National Farm Workers Association, they decided they're going to push, they're going to put all the pressure into that company because there was a lot of workers. So we pick it in every morning, and then, we don't have that much support, or there was a lot of pressure. So the company, they decided they're going to make an injunction. So we only, two picketers and one entrance, four picketers and the full entrance. Two in one side and two in another side. So, and I think the reason he decided that was because we have support for the workers, because even there was a strike workers, they know the union that was doing the right thing. So they do. They make that kind of thing.
And did you encounter the Teamsters there?
No. No, at this point, not in that time. It was a Teamsters. The Teamsters came later.
So what happened after the injunction?
After the injunction, we can make a big campaign with a leaflet. And they call in the leaflet, the name was El Mosquito Zumbador. You know who is Mosquito? It's a mosquito. And Zumbador is sooner when you listen to a mosquito and you get so sad and so, they make you so angry. Because soon, so we make the Mosquito Zumbador. So every morning, they made the Mosquito Zumbador, and we get to the area, and we started handle the leaflets to the workers. And the people, they were so nice. We organized everybody with a Mosquito Zumbador. So then the people decided they want to get in a strike. This is the second, this is the strike breakers. And so they, so one day when the company, excuse me, notice that all the workers, they're already organized. And we tell them, don't make any bad moves, because the company is so smart. They want to try to get over you guys because they know we already organized and we tried to get an election like in Chinle. No election, but we're going to try to push it so we can union contract. And don't get up because you, the workers right now, they stay there. So the company, he make a very bad move, because from one day to another day, he left to go to all the workers. And they decided they don't want it because they work anymore. So then he decided they went to Mexicali and Ciudad Juarez and Mexicali and Nogales and bring all kind of brick strikers, And then they tell the workers that we are crazy people, that we don't know how to work, and we try to make up, we are bad people, we make them, we mean to them and all kind of bad things to them. So then we started thinking, what are we going to do with these people? Because, they bring it with, and they said, don't open the windows because they have a very bad vocabulary. And so don't open the windows because those people, they're going to insult you guys and all kind of bad things to make, to tell these break strikers so then can get a very against us, to feel very bad against us anyway. So then my mom and my tia went to Cesar and said, Cesar, we know that we're not a balanced people. Can we do something? And Cesar said, yeah, okay, where do you want to do it? So my mom and my aunt said, well, we can put the Virgin of Guadalupe in front of the main entrance and for the main entrance for the workers in Sierra Vista. And we can pray all the nights that rosary. And so then the people can start to feel that we're not a bad people. So Cesar said, oh, yeah, this is a good idea. So then if we continue with that campaign, with the campaign with the mosquito zumbador. So but because they already, the people, they know that we are bad people and all those kind, they don't open the windows. But, you know, sometimes people start to see. They say, well, I want to know what's going on with these people. So then some people, they open a little bit the window, and we put some leaflets from the window, and people started reading, and then I started to feel, oh, wow, this is a nice thing. So then they started to tell, you know, each other, you know, listen to this worker, listen to this strikers. You know, there's not a bad people, you know, this is all, you know, it's a bullshit for the company and all of that. So we, and then we have the Virgin de Guadalupe and make a pray every day, so the rosary every day, so people start to feel, oh, this is not bad people. So people from over there, from the camp, the labor camp, they started coming to pray the rosary with us every night. So then we have the chance to talk about the union. They said, oh, okay. They said, we don't know that. And then we started, and we continued with those leaflets every morning. And every morning we send, we put all the news for the union news. So I, you know, Chanley, the union, he signed a union contract. Workers, they make a nice, they make it more money, and they do this and that. So people started, oh my God, this is so wrong. So that was very nice. So we organized all the workers like that. Again, you know, that was already the break strikers. So we organized all these people, and we have election. And we won the election.
Did the Jamara people ever, were they ever...
The chance?
Intimidate you, or
there wasn't
on the picket lines, did they do anything to you, or did they come out and try to run you off or anything?
Well, this is another you know, after we won the Giorgio campaign, we decided that the Giorgio, oh yes, you're talking about the Giorgio, yes, a lot of people, you know, because they have they have a good people and bad people. And, you know, of course, the bad people, they always try to do for money. They can do all kind of things. They try to intimidate us. And one time I told them, you know, when I mentioned to you about the kind of accident they have, when I have a accident, and I think it was one of those people, yeah, there was an intimidation.
What did they do to you on the picket lines? Did they?
Sometimes bad words, like, you know, oh, the women's, they're not that good, they're the women's only in this. Oh, I don't, it's hard to say those words, because for me, for me, it still hurt. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, women's, they're not good, women's this and that. Very bad, very bad words. Mm-hmm. And like... we not a very all the strikers women, they like a prostitutes, but they bet in the better bad things. I make it very bad.
Did they have guns?
I not say yes. I can say yes, but you know, yeah, they were. They really mean. They really try to be. Very mean. When I said very mean, they're very, very mean. Under the, you know.
Do they spray you with chemicals or?
Well, some, you know, and not to me, not to me. You know, I say all the bad words. They talk to me, you know, because I was one of the. I talked to the workers, and I think, you know, the answer was, you know, were the guys bad, very bad guys. And one particular person make me feel so...